to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Instead, I want to talk about the fires, their historical context, their consequences, and what we might expect in the future.
Many of us woke up on September 8th to a new reality. We didn't know, but the severity of the human impact of the fire, our shared interest in supporting these rural communities and the people that live there brought us together in this event. One of the themes that I'm really hearing and seeing from community members in the McKenzie is hope.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, KP.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's November 13, 2020 program, Fire on the River. Before, during, and after the Holiday Farm Fire. This is the 10th program of our 2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are rebroadcast on public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. On to today's program. On the night of September 7th, the Holiday Farm Fire ignited near milepost 47 on Oregon Highway 126 along the banks of the McKenzie River. By September 9th, the U.S. Forest Service Incident Command reported, quote, red flag conditions have caused explosive fire growth over the past 2 days on the Holiday Farm Fire. Firefighters have been constantly moving as they conduct rescue operations and try to hold the fire when it's possible. The region, the state, and the entire West Coast have been heavily impacted by fires. Resources are scarce at this time, end quote. Over the ensuing hours and days, the Holiday Farm Fire would consume more than 173,000 acres of the McKenzie River Valley, level hundreds of homes, and displace Valley residents across multiple communities. In the face of such extraordinary circumstances, in such an extraordinary river valley, local community organizations and individuals rallied to the cause. This program, the first of two City Club programs on the Holiday Farm Fire, is focused on the inspired community response and extraordinary natural context of the McKenzie River itself. I would like to thank Karin Knudsen, a member of the City Club's program committee, for coordinating today's program and for serving as moderator. Today's speakers include Joe Mall, Gordon Grant, and Jared Pruch. Joe Mall of the McKenzie River Trust will share his organization's close relationship with the river landscape and explain how that familiarity allowed the trust to pivot from land conservation to emergency response assistance at the height of the widespread evacuation. Joe has been the executive director of the McKenzie River Trust for 15 years. He began working with the trust in January 2005 after working mostly with grizzly bears and landowners in Montana and Hokkaido, Japan during the preceding 2 decades. His undergraduate degree is in economics, and he holds a master's degree from the University of Montana Missoula's School of Forestry. Outside of his work with the trust, he likes to spend as much time as he can running trails and exploring the outdoors with his wife and 3 boys. Gordon Grant of the U.S. Forest Service will share the deeper history of the McKenzie River itself. The unique hydrogeomorphology of this watershed and insights to how this landscape weathers crises. Gordon is a research hydrologist for the U.S. Forest Service and a courtesy professor in the College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Sciences at Oregon State University. He holds a PhD from Johns Hopkins University and a BA from the Clark Honors College at the University of Oregon. Over the past 35 years, his research has focused on understanding the geomorphic response of rivers to changes in stream flow and sediment transport due to land use, dams, and dam removal, volcanic eruptions, and climate change. Jared Pruch, Director of Community Impact at United Way of Lane County, will share how an outpouring of community support is helping to meet emergency needs. The United Way's Wildfire Response Fund has already invested nearly $475,000 in local recovery and response efforts. Jared Pruch has been the Director of Community Impact at United Way of Lane County since 2017. He is responsible for directing United Way's community investment grant making and providing leadership and support to United Way's community impact efforts, including the Wildfire Response Fund. Before joining the United Way, Jared spent several years supporting grassroots, community-driven projects for Cascade Pacific Resource and Conservation and Development and earned degrees from Colorado College and the University of Oregon. Thank you, and now I will turn it over to Karin Knutson.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you, City Club listeners, for joining us today. As Scott mentioned, this is the first of two programs on the Holiday Farm Fire and Community Recovery. And before we begin, I want to offer just a brief warning that today's program will include descriptions of events that were quite destructive in our community and certainly are associated with grief that many people are still experiencing. So just a warning to listeners that some of our discussion today certainly has emotional components to it, and we want you to be thinking about that as you prepare to join us. And with that, I will hand it off to Joe Moll of McKinsey River Trust.
Thanks, Karin. I'm Joe Moll. I'm the executive director of McKinsey River Trust, and certainly no expert on the river or this fire. There are a great many people who have been out on the ground for the last 2 months, even as we meet today, working to both understand and address what's happened. So I think my opportunity today is just to give you a few thoughts on what we've experienced and what we're thinking, and as City Club has often done, give us a chance to consider how we move forward with some of these challenges and opportunities that may be behind them. So in the days that followed the outbreak of the Holiday Farm fire, many of us downstream could only imagine what was happening upstream. The official reports were limited, aerial photos were nearly impossible to get because of prevailing winds and smoke. And the stories we heard in phone calls or read in the news or online were so shocking and surreal that it was hard to grasp. I remember stepping outside to water our garden. Given my work with the trust, I've developed a habit of recognizing the McKinsey River wherever I find it. In this case, it was right there, coming out of the hose and showering a few plants. I was used to that association, but now the tomatoes and the lettuce and the strawberry leaves were coated in thick ash from a fire that was from that same place. I was now pouring the McKinsey River back onto its forests right there in my garden. For someone miles downstream whose life and home and neighborhood was fully intact, that realization was one of the first times I began to get even a hint about the scale of what had really happened. David Perry of Vida lost his life. Hundreds of people lost homes, businesses, all their goods, many memories. All of us lost whatever self-assurance we had that things like that fire could really only happen somewhere else. So what did happen? What really happened? And how do we make sense of it? We think we understand how the world works around here, and this kind of a disaster really, really tests us. The McKinsey is on fire. The town of Blue River is gone. That's how it was described for me that morning of September 8th. And it made me think of two things to highlight First, the river itself is so much of how we define that much larger geography. The thought of a fire on a river, like the Cuyahoga in Ohio in 1969 and many times before that, that doesn't make sense around here. The forests and homes and communities in the footprint of the Holiday Farm fire certainly burned, but our minds still associate that whole valley with the Mackenzie River. I think there are a lot of people who kept pulling that name even from the Holiday Farm to just the Mackenzie Fire. The river is a powerful force, not just for the goods and services it provides. It's a powerful draw on our hearts. It's a touchstone, a point of reference. It is home ground. And the thought that it was on fire added another layer of pain to the loss of life and the loss of whatever levels of security and wealth and memory that residents and the rest of us felt. But the river is still there. The second thing to consider is that sense that somehow the town of Blue River is gone. Totally understandable at the time. People fled the fire during an inferno. They were already seeing things burn to the ground. Embers, some as big as your hand, were flying horizontal in that east wind. There seemed to be no way that any structure would survive. After the fire raced through and the smoke started to clear, it was apparent that many had been consumed, but not all, and certainly not the town's sense of itself as a community. Battered though the people of Blue River and Nimrod and Vida and Leeburg have been by this fire, they have remained connected and positive and creative. They even found some solace in humor while things still smoldered. Some remarked tongue-in-cheek that they realize now that they just need to rebuild with bricks and river rocks because their chimneys still stood while everything else had burned. I've only been upriver twice since that fire, and both times I experienced the disorientation that many had warned me about. Where am I? Many of the points of reference are missing. Houses, vehicles, signs, businesses, groves of trees, the waypoints for how we make our way upstream and downstream, fallen down, twisted beyond recognition, some simply gone. Even standing along the banks of the river above Finn Rock or in the forests nearby is unsettling. It's disorienting for me. On the ground, it's like a great uncovering has occurred. Those mountains of blackberry at the old Roseboro ponds, well, with the blackberry burned off, now we see clean piles of gravel. The young forest on the flats of Riverbank left, with its thick ferns and understory bramble burned away, the forest floor is revealed to be dotted with piles of cans and bottles discarded by the people living there over the last 70 years. This fire has uncovered some history, how we've used the land and this river for the last century. Those huge cottonwoods that towered above us on walks across the old cross-country course between Elk Creek and the Mackenzie, their deep blankets of moss seemingly evaporated, and many are now laid down on the ground, generally in a downriver direction, toppled by that wind. The wind-driven fire baked the forested hillsides. In many places, dug fir held on to scorched needles. Even pockets of hardwood held on to some of their leaves, crisp though they were. Over the last 2 months, those needles and leaves have fallen and are helping to cover the ground. That will help temper the potential erosion that will come with rain and melting snow. At the same time, as that canopy either burned away or has now fallen away, the underlying landforms are uncovered. You can better see, for example, why those forested floodplains are so productive and produce those giant cottonwoods in there. Or back in the day, the fir and cedar stumps, whose stumps remain from the early 20th century harvests. The soil in there is deep, a gift from the river during high water. At the same time, when you move up the hillsides, you can see so much clearly how thin the soils are in some places, how much rock is upslope, and how it has broken off over time, but to be held in place by trees that grew there, many now standing dead. And some of those slopes are right above Highway 126, and in places, some of our houses and home sites are right below them. Even driving that highway, another thing that has been uncovered is just how close we are to the river, not just in our hearts and minds, but in physical distance. As hazard trees have been taken down, especially the river and the limited buffer between our lives and the river is now quite visible. The health of that water is a community asset whose value appreciates more by the day. Those of us downstream looking upstream need to consider that buffer and how we can encourage and support good stewardship of such a valuable community treasure. We have another treasure upriver, thankfully, a place that has given us a framework for trying to understand big changes like this in the forest and streams and the McKenzie River. Right there past Blue River, you have the H.J. Andrews Experimental Forest, a long-term ecological research site, a place to learn about the forest, the land, and the water. For I think 70 plus years, they've been methodical in their observations and asking, what happened here? Whether it's the slow decay of a downed log over 100 years or more, or the range and number of fish, reptiles, and aquatic insects using different parts of a stream, or the growth of trees following different silvicultural treatments, or how landslides happen in different places at different times. Quietly, day after day, year after year, researchers there are watching, noting things, coming up with questions, testing assumptions, as science is designed to do, all to help us better understand what just happened, what's happening now, what might happen in the future. At H.J. since 2003, there's also been a long-term ecological reflections project, in which artists and writers and thinkers look at that connection between our hearts and places like the McKenzie River, between our souls and a towering hemlock or the smallest of salamanders. They too ask those questions. What happened? What's happening here now? What might happen in the future? So perhaps the most important thing that this experience and the framework that places like H.J. and science and the humanities in general can help us uncover is how hard we cling to our assumptions. We're pretty good at assuming we know what's going on and what will come and how to handle it. We have a difficult time pausing just to witness something that has happened before immediately assuming we know cause and effect. We have a long road ahead of us, and we will do really well to be patient with each other, to learn from each other, and perhaps press pause on what we assume we know about what happened and how best to respond. So I know that Gordon will have a few thoughts about this, and I don't want to assume too much about what you have to say, but I'll pass the microphone now to Gordon Grant.
Thank you, Joe, for that really eloquent picture that you've painted of the river and what has happened. I'm Gordon Grant. I'm a research hydrologist with the Pacific Northwest Research Station of the U.S. Forest Service, and I'm also a courtesy professor of geosciences at Oregon State University. The McKenzie River has been part of my life for over half a century, ever since I moved out to Eugene in the mid-60s. My first river fishing trip, my first real view of whitewater rapids, my early years as a river guide, my graduate school dissertation, and a primary focus of almost 40 years of research, and now as a grateful owner of a river cabin that thankfully survived the fire, even as I acknowledge all the people whose homes were lost. In all that time, the McKenzie and its tributaries have been my home waters. I've spent the last 35 years of my life working as a hydrologist and geomorphologist for the research branch of the Forest Service. It's been my privilege to spend my adult life studying rivers and their form and their behavior from around the world. And from that experience, I can state unequivocally that the McKenzie River is one of the most unusual and unique rivers on planet Earth. Every river is unique in some ways, but some are more unique than others, and the McKenzie is one of the most special. This uniqueness stems in large part from having its headwaters in an active range of young volcanoes that receive 9 to 10 feet of precipitation in an average year. Many of the things we love most about the river, the color and clarity of its water, its persistence through the dry Oregon summer, the cold temperatures that sustain an incredibly productive fisheries, aquatic habitat, and many other features come from this geological setting. I don't have the time today to really do this geological story justice. Perhaps I can come back at some future point and share it with you. But instead, I want to talk about the fires, their historical context, their consequences, and what we might expect in the future. While the geological template, that was the stage on which the fires took place, it wasn't a big factor in what happened, although it may influence what will happen down the road. As a geologist, I spend a lot of time thinking about time. And there are a lot of telescoping timescales embedded within the fire event, starting with the minutes, hours, days, and weeks over which the fire burned, which Joe characterized so beautifully, followed now by the months and likely years of recovery and restoration, and ultimately the decades and centuries over which a new forest will grow and mature. But there are also the timescales and of centuries and millennia over which fires like this one have occurred. And these are useful for thinking about the present fires. And there are also events lasting days, weeks, and years to come over which some of the consequences of the fire are likely to be felt. Concerning the fire history, we know that fire has always been a part of the Oregon landscape. The indigenous people who lived here long before the Europeans came to settle it, probably lived with very smoky summers. From interpreting fire history as preserved in fire scars and tree rings in our older forests, we know that fires came in different flavors and different places had different fire regimes. For the wet west side forests, in general, there were two main types of fires, relatively frequent, say 80 to 100 year return period in any one place, fires that burn small to moderate sized patches. And then rare, say every 300 to 500 year, massive fires that burn very large areas. This past summer was of the latter category. Most likely these massive fires were the result of a very similar weather pattern and driven by very strong eastern winds after extended dry periods. The historical record is too fuzzy to interpret whether it's similar patterns of fire rolling out of and down through the Western River valleys prevailed, but it's likely. So what we've just experienced is a rare event at the human time scale, though not an unusual event at the time at the century to millennial time scale. In the same way that fire regimes are different in different places, fires do different things in different places as well. Right now, there's a lot of concern about what the implications of all this burned steep ground is likely to be for in the coming winters when we get our big storms. This concern typically focuses on issues such as flooding, landslides, and debris floats. For many people, the images that come to mind are what typically happens in Southern California and the Southwest after fire, where fire is followed by floods and destructive debris flows. This is of concern in this region, although there are a number of reasons why this is less likely to occur here, and these are factors including that involve climate, geology, and vegetation. Our storms here are typically less intense. The water that falls and the snow that melts rapidly infiltrate our forest soils. And fires typically do not result in widespread impervious layers, which goes by the mouthful word hydrophobicity. And all this means that increased flooding and accompanying debris flows are likely to be less common here than, say, in Southern California. What is more worrisome is the potential for landsliding and debris flows. And this is likely to be a concern over the next 5 to 10 years, as the root systems that these trees supported decay and hill slopes become increasingly unstable. Another concern that I would expect to see manifest itself most likely starting this winter, but certainly occurring over the next decade or so, is that we're going to see a lot of that burned wood ending up in the river itself. So the first people down the river in each river season are going to have to take extra precautions to be aware that a river that they know oh so well is likely to be choked in some places by burned debris. So these are likely to be some of the initial manifestations of the fire. Certainly, if we were to get a large storm in here of the kind that happened in 1996, then all kinds of mischief becomes possible and all bets are off. But it is my expectation that we're going to see, at least in the coming winter or two, certainly muddy water, certainly ash washing off the hills, certainly trees falling in, but unlikely to see the massive scale of destruction that we see following following fires in Southern California. Over time, the landscape will change, and change is a fundamental property of the landscapes, of all landscapes in this place. This is going to be both full of surprises that we don't expect, but also there will be a certain, I believe, comfort and satisfaction as new growth becomes apparent, as new trees take root, as the forest cover, as the moss that Joe spoke about, reestablishes itself, as the mushrooms grow and carpet the slopes. And I would expect to see that in the next, by 100 years from now, the people who drive up the river, as we all do, will see a very, in some ways, familiar landscape, even as it has changed from what we have known so well from the past. So I'd now like to turn this over to Jaron Prooch, who will give us a deeper sense of what the human response to this event has been. Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon and Joe and Karin. I'm Jared Prooch, Director of Community Impact at United Way of Lane County. And I'm going to speak to how United Way, with the support of community donations, has been trying to support responses to the human impacts of the Holiday Farm fire, and share a few specific stories of how we've seen community organizations and volunteers coming together to respond to needs. United Way has a strong focus on education and health, particularly for children and youth, as well as a guiding emphasis on equity, which to us means identifying and working to address disparities that community members in Lane County face because of race, geography, and income. And one of the ways that we do our work is by raising funds to invest in community-based organizations that are providing services to vulnerable families and individuals. There are other ways that we've been involved in the Holiday Farm fire through our volunteer coordination work and participation in our local COAD, which stands for Community Organizations Active in Disaster. But I'm going to primarily talk about our involvement through our Wildfire Response Fund and the efforts we've been able to support with community donations. As Joe said, many of us woke up on September 8th to a new reality, experiencing something we haven't experienced before as a community and something that we never thought could happen. That morning, we started hearing those just heartbreaking stories about people having to flee RV parks with just the clothes on their backs. Firefighters losing their homes while they were fighting the fire. Real concerns about how far the fire was going to spread. Was the fire going to come down to Marcola or into Thurston? We didn't know, but the severity of the human impact of the fire, along with the environmental impacts that have been discussed, was immediately evident. We now know that the fire destroyed over 800 structures, including at least 460 residential structures and 30 commercial buildings. So on the Wednesday morning after the fire started, we launched a Wildfire Response Fund at United Way. And it's worth noting that we did that in partnership with the Mackenzie River Trust. Our two organizations haven't had a formal relationship in the past, but our shared interest in supporting these rural communities and the people that live there brought us together in this event. And when we launched the fund, the community showed up really quickly to provide financial support. We had thousands of new donors in a matter of a week, and phones were ringing off the hook at our office. In the first week, community members donated over $400,000 to the Wildfire Response Fund from donors right here in Lane County and also from around the country. So I want to really pause and thank everyone, probably many of the listeners of this program, who contributed to this fund, as well as other wildfire response efforts. We've now invested over $500,000 in services related to the human impacts of the fire, and we will continue investing as critical needs emerge over time. We recognized early on that there were going to be a few stages of this disaster, as with any disaster,
an immediate response and relief stage, and a midterm to long-term recovery stage, and that it was going to be important to be thoughtful about what community needs would arise and be most critical over time. So one of the things we did the first week was to reach out to other communities that have lived through severe fire events. Some of our fellow United Ways in Northern California that lived through the campfire that destroyed the Paradise community, the car fire that burned neighborhoods in Redding. Those felt like faraway events that all of a sudden were here on our doorstep. And there were a couple big takeaways we had from those conversations. And one of them was how long the recovery process is going to take. We are really just crossing the starting line right now. And number two, how quickly a disaster like this is likely to fade from public attention, despite the fact that the needs will be persistent and long-term. We know, for example, that when a disaster hits, donations typically peak 4 to 6 weeks after the event, and by 6 months after the event, they've typically zeroed out, even though some of the most urgent community needs, human needs, won't be presenting themselves until 6 months or a year after a disaster. So in that initial response and relief stage during the first few weeks after the fire began, there were a large number of residents of the Mackenzie Valley displaced into Eugene and Springfield. And for those community members, we were really seeing the need for basic services like emergency food and shelter. We saw food trucks popping up to feed fire survivors, faith-based groups stepping up to provide lodging. People needed access to crisis counseling. People needed things as simple as having a place to take a shower, childcare services for families that were under tremendous strain, and getting highly vulnerable, like seniors and foster families, people living with intellectual and developmental disabilities connected to services. Just basic needs that any of us would experience if we were suddenly displaced from our home and maybe didn't have as much financial stability as we would like. And it's worth noting here that many residents of the Mackenzie Valley were struggling before the fire. It's a rural area that faces many of the barriers that exist in other rural areas of Lane County. Transportation barriers, lack of jobs, lack of affordable housing, challenges around access to high quality childcare. So when disasters hit, whether it's COVID or a wildfire, we know those disaster events will hit hardest for people already facing the greatest disparities. Families navigating poverty, people of color, people who don't have a permanent address or a stable place to live. During the initial stage, we were also really trying to get a sense of what other resources like Red Cross and FEMA were going to be available to help people out so there wasn't a duplication of services. I'm representing United Way, but I want to really acknowledge the many other organizations and individuals that stepped up in significant ways during the fire. Lane County Emergency Management, the Red Cross, the community volunteers over at Silky Field, faith-based organizations, really just too many to list. We have a lot to learn that we need to learn collectively from this event, because there will be another disaster. It's not a question of if, but when. But we also have a lot of assets that show up in disaster. So on the one hand, we were trying to understand critical needs in the urban area where displaced residents were in temporary housing, but also consider the needs in the Mackenzie Valley, particularly in Blue River, the areas and communities most affected by the fires. Because our United Way has established relationships with nonprofit organizations in the Mackenzie, we were hearing firsthand the kinds of critical needs that were emerging upriver in those first few weeks. Things like a generator for a church that was serving as a community hub in Mackenzie Bridge, hot meals for first responders and community members in Rainbow, support for the Mackenzie Valley residents that had been displaced over to Deschutes County. They evacuated to the east rather than to the west. And support for the Blue River Health Clinic, which was burned in the fire, so they could make the pivot to providing telehealth services and staying connected to their clients. We really saw the Mackenzie River communities demonstrate tremendous resilience and adaptation when the disaster hit. Community organizations started hosting regular coordination calls. There were organizations rethinking how they could use their existing assets to support community needs. One example of that is the McKenzie Community Track and Field. They thought maybe we could have the track serve as a spot for families whose kids are enrolled in the school to park RVs over the winter so that the kids can stay connected to school. And the last story I want to share about community organizations in the McKenzie responding to the fire kind of exemplifies the pivot moment that we're in right now, moving from immediate relief and response and beginning to look at an interim recovery stage. People may have seen this story in the news. There are a series of relief centers in the McKenzie, Blue River Relief Center, the Rainbow Relief Center, and the Vita Relief Center, for community members to access emergency food, water, and donated goods and other services. And these relief centers were organized by community volunteers, just neighbors helping neighbors. In some cases, people who have lost their homes or their income are there volunteering because they want to help each other out. One of the goals is to provide a location where community members can access services over the winter, particularly if there is a weather event like a flood or an ice storm that isolates these communities. So the relief centers to me are evidence that the McKenzie communities and the people that live there are already thinking about mitigation and preparedness, which is where every disaster cycle begins and ends. It's a huge testament to these communities that they've brought this effort together in a time of tremendous crisis and stress. So here we are about 2 months past when the fire started, and we know this is just the very beginning of a long process of recovery to a new normal. But I want to just end on a bit of a hopeful note. Not to diminish in any way the trauma that the survivors of the fire have lived through or the significance of the loss and the significance of the process of recovery, but one of the themes that I'm really hearing and seeing from community members in the McKenzie is hope. People being really thoughtful and creative about the possibilities that exist when we go through a disruptive crisis like this. We're seeing community organizations and volunteers coming together in new ways to think about what they want their community to look like in the long term, to build upon the unique identity and the unique assets of this valley that so many of us cherish. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared Prooch and Gordon Grant and Joe Moll, for your remarks and for helping us to better understand the context of the Holiday Farm fire and also this extraordinary valley and river that we all live as a part of.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.